am Pat Schlarbaum, and with co-host Ann Kinzel on Zoom. Great to have you with us, Ann. Thank you for listening. Since March 17th, when the Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced a public health disaster, Iowans, like the rest of the world, have been enveloped in adaptations to a growing worldwide pandemic. And today, through the technology of Zoom, which is similar to the Skype broadcast, new to world journalism, we will be joined by Ross Wilburn, state legislator from House District 46 in the Ames area, Susan Guiasta, City of Ames Public Relations Officer, with John Dunn, also with the City of Ames. And the weather forecast is overcast the next few days, highs in the 50s and maybe into the 60s on Wednesday, back to the 50s by Friday with a chance of showers. Ah, spring. We just want more spring. And now joining us through Zoom is Ross Wilburn, Diversity Officer and Associate Director for Community of Economic Development at Iowa State University. Hello, Ross.
Good morning. How are you, Pat?
Oh, I'm great. I think we're making this work. Wonderful.
Very good. Great. Knock on wood. Throw some salt over your shoulder.
So far, so good. Yeah. And yeah. Ann, are you with us?
I am.
Oh, great.
I am. Technology works this morning.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness for small favors. Ross, we have an unfolding situation. How do you feel, and how do you feel we should proceed on March 24th for today? What is in your thoughts?
Well, first, just thanks for the opportunity to be here to chat with you folks and give an update on what I can. Mm-hmm. I'm limited to technology and phone calls and trying to limit my trips outside of my house. Yeah. Like we all should be.
Uh-huh.
And I guess just a couple messages before we really get started is really control the things that you have control over. Sometimes life gets pretty big and we can't control what bills are being passed in Washington, D.C., what our president will or will not sign, but we can control whether we wash our hands for more than 20 seconds or not. We can control the number of times we leave the house, and we can control whether I went to Walgreens yesterday because I ran out of some medication, and I controlled when I chatted with someone, we were 6 to 7 feet apart, and those are the simple things that we can do, and really it's trying to think of others, think of who you might infect, and so basically just thanks to everybody who's been doing that, and especially those who have been cooperating with, the governor has mandated certain actions. She has, requested and relied on the, Iowa friendliness of everyone with certain other actions. And, some people have been cooperating, and I've been hearing reports from emails from constituency work that other people have not. And, I would just ask those folks, really try and think what happens, if you aren't cooperating with some of those things and you make someone, a loved one, sick, and if they were to unfortunately die, knock on wood, fortunately no one in Iowa has yet.
Yeah. Last evening, we were here, at the station kind of preparing for this work today. There were people bicycling by, everyone since the lights were on. I think we were one of the few businesses here in the downtown Ames area that we were trying to meet the needs of the Ames community, providing service, and having your measured voice is we're very fortunate that you have agreed to share with us legislatively where things are at the state level. Are there
It's why you pay me the big bucks, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Actually, I've been on a leave of absence from Iowa State Extension, so I've had to be extra judicious with how and where I'm spending my money at as well.
Yeah, so normally your work day would have been involved with Iowa State University, but I guess
right.
But being shut down.
Yeah, but I'm on an unpaid leave of absence, so I can't be doing stuff for Iowa State for liability reasons as well.
Yeah, well, this is great to have you with us. So let's go over some of the provisions that the governor has laid out, and maybe some projections on what you would like to see happening in our Iowa community.
Well, a couple things that came out yesterday just after her press conference, and I want to thank the governor for holding those press conferences. It looks like when I was in the studio early last week, I think it was, we talked about ways that she can be a bit more routine and regular so people know when to expect a message coming out. So it looks like 2:30 is the time she's landed on. But my understanding is that the state of Iowa is going to be able to receive at least an additional $124 million in federal Medicaid funding. So that will certainly help out.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of small businesses, on top of what the Small Business Association is doing, the Iowa Economic Development Authority has some small grants that people can apply for. Small businesses, if they've got 2 to 25 employees that are experiencing a loss. So those are a couple positive things that are happening. And a lot of small businesses, I think they are the glue that really holds community together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that, you know, they're not going to get the large subsidy bailout that some of the larger industries will. And so, and it's our neighbors that have these jobs that it's important for us to patronize too around town.
We're nonprofit.
Ross.
Yep.
Ross, I have a question about that.
Yes.
So a lot of small businesses, you know, struggle to survive in the best of times.
Yep.
And, every hand is on deck to make the business work. So is there some assistance being offered to help some of our micro businesses to actually access these funds? What are they supposed to do to be able to get there?
Right. A couple things come to mind. If you're a small business, again, you know, less than 50, less than 25 employees, if you have web access, internet access, you can go to the Iowa Department of Economic Development. A lot of places are putting a COVID-19 link, coronavirus link that you can access that. If you don't have that, look up their phone number, give them a call. They'll be able to assist this, and they have some small grants available. The Small Business Association, because the governor did, finally put the paperwork in last week, for the in D.C. for the Small Business Association to have some loans available for businesses that are affected, which includes nonprofit, by the way, and they can access that. Also, yesterday, Delta Dental sent me a letter because not only are they having some assistance available for dentists, they also are having some assistance available for nonprofits who have a health and wellness focus. So those are a couple different avenues. So if you go to Delta Dental's webpage, you can access that. I did email that information out to the United Way of Story County. Emailed that to Jean over there. So she's got that information. She's going to pass that on to the nonprofits. And I emailed it to Drew at the Ames Chamber of Commerce, and he's going to be contacting both some nonprofits and some of the local dentists to make sure they have that available.
Well, these are great examples of how we can work together both across the private sector and the public sector.
Absolutely.
To get through this crisis.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Russ, you are our representative from House District 46.
Right.
In your preparation for your service at the State House, was this even remotely a part of your plan of your activities starting in January?
Well, actually, maybe it's ironically or not, But as a former mayor of the city of Iowa City, I had to deal with floods, and actually my third or fourth month as mayor in 2006 was when the tornado hit Iowa City. So I had a trial by fire in terms of emergency response and FEMA preparedness, and you know, trying to help manage our way through the damage and cleanup, as well as avenues for people to support each other, because you know, citizens are very willing to jump forward and try and find out how they can help. It takes a coordinated effort to make sure that the help that people are wanting to give is actually going to contribute, and that we've got capacity to absorb that, as opposed to that offer of assistance being something that's not in the short term not going to be very helpful.
Ross, I think you raise an interesting point there. In a disaster, the kind that we're used to in Iowa, a flood, a tornado, the event happens, it's over, and then we jump in as humans and we get to work and we clean things up.
Right.
In this case, it's very different. We're actually being asked to stop and slow down.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up, Anne. And I would actually equate it closer to a flood than a tornado, because we see the rain coming, you know, the heavy rains and the water table being high. We see that the water is rising when we are, you know, funding those avenues that we have to monitor the riverways and creeks. And so it's what you can do to get prepared. And you're kind of twiddling your thumbs waiting for it to happen. When is it going to get here? When is it going to get here? Is it going to get here? How much damage is going to occur? So really, I kind of equate it to a flood. And then once the water is crested, how long is it going to take for the water to subside? How long is it going to be before we can get in there and clean up mold and all of that? And throughout all of that, there's a period of anxiety, and it stirs up people's past experience with crisis. So I tend to think of this as a flood. And in fact, what we're trying to do, when they talk about trying to stretch out the effect on our healthcare and mental healthcare system, we're hoping that it's more of that rolling flood that we can prepare for, as opposed to a tsunami tidal wave. That's kind of the analogy that I think about.
That's really interesting. I'm a desert kid, so the whole flood concept is like, wow. But I think I understand what you're saying. It's sort of a wait and watch, and then try to be smart in how you respond.
Right. And the second piece to that is, in this particular case, we're trying to do some prevention work so that we can manage the situation. A lot of times people think of prevention, well, you stopped it or you didn't stop it, whether it's illness or mental illness, or you know, in terms of youth behavior, whether you stopped it or not. When a lot of cases you're preparing people and you're preparing the community for when something happens, here's how we're going to manage our way through it, as opposed to did you stop it or not. And if done well, there'll be people around, some of the naysayers that will criticize and say that you overreacted. And you know, kudos to the people that get into public health and people that help with preparedness, and all the folks who are on the front line, from our healthcare, mental health care providers too, in this particular situation, the folks that are making below, at, or slightly above minimum wage, who are in some of those necessary jobs, our letter carriers, our folks that are working in the grocery stores. We've got some folks that are, you know, our teachers, educators, and school staff, bus drivers are stepping forward to make sure our names that the kiddos have access to the free lunches there. So thank you to all those folks and folks at the city of Ames that are doing their thing to make sure that city functions are continuing. I think I might have heard you say that, you know, the people that are at the water plant, we want to make sure that they are well and not getting sick, so that our drinking water will stay good.
Yeah, and we'll get a chance to talk to John Dunn about that next. But, you know, you mentioned earlier, Ross, that you were doing constituent work.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain for our listeners a little bit about what that is and how your constituent work has changed in light of the COVID-19 crisis?
Mm-hmm. Well, constituent is a fancy word of saying my fellow citizens, the citizens of Ames. But in the age of technology and Zoom meetings, it also means everybody else in the state who is trying to reach a legislator or someone that they think can try and help impact or get messages up to the governor. So, you know, again, I'm more accustomed to going to meetings out in the community. When we were in session as opposed to suspended, I didn't stay in Des Moines like a lot of the distance legislators. I would come back every night, and I tried 2 weekdays, even though I was getting back, you know, from anywhere from 6 to 9 o'clock at night, to see if there was some event going on at the university. I went and heard Aaron Brockovich at the student union to, you know, one of the youth athletic events, or the grocery store even, just to stay in touch with people to see what's on their minds. In this case, I'm having to limit it to phone calls and Zoom sessions. I have been out on my bike a couple times, and as I was keeping my distance, calling out to some folks, just asking how they're doing. So, you know, that's been part of it. We met, had a conference call with some other Democratic legislators last night, and we were just kind of sharing some of the things that we're doing. In some cases, we are going to start calling around, just random calls to some citizens in Ames. I'll do that. Just, how are you doing? How are you feeling about all this? Are you getting the support that you need? Are you helping others? Are you keeping yourself safe as you're trying to help others? I've been anywhere from doing things like that to I sent a letter to the school superintendent and board president just to let them know if there are any problems that come up with complying with some of the recommendations from the governor in terms of education. Let me know what I can do, and as we continue on down the road, if there are some policy or logistical things where education and public health interact, let me know, and I can try and get those passed on to the governor's office or the department heads. I've been in contact with Mayor Hala. We're just passing information back and forth. I've been in contact with County Supervisor Linda Merkin, who's the emergency response. That's her function on the board, one of her functions on the Board of Supervisors. So part of it's just making sure that reaching out to other elected officials to, you know, what do you know, what are you seeing, and let me know how I can help when it comes to the state level. If you're having trouble connecting with the state or the department heads, those are some of the things. And like I said, it's a little bit more challenging not being able to do the face-to-face, but it's important work to do.
Well, a lot of people don't feel like we're very lucky right now, but I think of this in a little bit different way. I take it we're the first pandemic that had the means to practice physical distancing and social connectedness. And somehow that feels a lot better to me than being stuck in some medieval village at the end of the road.
Yeah. We do have ways to stay in contact. And, you know, and which reminds me, another bit of constituency work. I was invited by some social workers across the state to participate in a Zoom meeting last night. So I did that as well. So that's the other thing, is my days are getting stretched out quite a bit from early morning, things like this, which I'm glad to do. But, you know, some folks are asking if I can participate in some of their conference calls or Zoom meetings, and I'm very glad to do it. And it helps, again, it helps me keep in touch with what they're facing so that I can continue to pass that information on to the governor, the governor's staff, in hopes of trying to make sure that any gaps are being addressed. And then when we come back into session on April 15th, if there are further gaps, then I know the Democratic caucus, we will try and work with the Republicans in the House to see which ones they are willing to try and have addressed.
Well, that's great. Ross, we're going to have to wrap up with you this morning. What is the best way for constituents to reach you if they need to reach you?
They can email me is probably the best way because my phone and phone messages are really starting to fill up. But email gives me a chance to go back and make sure that if I didn't miss anything. But it's Ross Wilburn, R-O-S-S-W-I-L-B-U-R-N, at Legis, L-E-G-I-S, dot Iowa, spelled out, dot G-O-V. And I believe there is a period in between. Let me grab a card and make sure.
No worries, Ross. If people need to find you, I'm sure they can Google Iowa Legislature on the Internet. And I think there's a page that provides that information. So thank you so much, Representative
Ross Wilburn.
You bet.
Glad to do it. And it is ross.wilburn at Legis.
Okay, perfect. Right. We look forward to seeing you again on the radio.
Very good. Be safe. Be healthy.
Thank you, Ross Wilburn. And so fortunate that we are, that we have elected officials coming and kind of giving us the ground truthing of what we're all experiencing, trying to strengthen our community through this new form of communication, the Zoom.
The Zoom, yes.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, this is KHOY, the heart of Iowa, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and I'm Pat Schlarba. Today with co-host Ann Kinzel, and we have Mike Murphy from Kansas City is here at the controls, and as we prepare for our next Zoom meeting, let's do a little phonology. Phonology is the recording of nature's happenings when they occur. The first woodland hepatica blooming in the spring, or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's focus on phonology includes some of our migratory birds returning to Iowa, killdeer, red-winged blackbirds, and turkey vultures, kind of the big three of early migrants. First, the shoreburn community of birds has been represented by killdeer. Their name comes from their frequently heard call. These birds look to wetlands referred to as ephemerals this time of year. Ephemeral ponds contain shallow water in our landscape depressions that hold water during snowmelt and later with heavy rains. Shorebirds like killdeer appreciate the opportunity to wade and peck for invertebrates and seeds. However, as spring progresses and ephemeral ponds dry up, additional insects and larvae will appear to bolster their diet. Killdeer will inhabit open gravelly areas and are the least water dependent of the shorebird family. It's just that right now, open areas are still frozen and the ephemeral ponds provide a food-rich area. Often killdeer can be seen on roadsides and open parking lots, and these birds will frequently use a distraction display or broken wing act to distract predators and you from their nests. This involves the bird walking away from its nesting area, holding its wing in a position that simulates an injury, and then flapping around on the ground, emitting a distress call. Predators that might be a feral cat or a raccoon at dusk think they have easy prey and are attracted to the seemingly injured bird and away from the nest. This is repeated until the predator is far from the nest, and the killdeer suddenly heals itself and flies away. Their ability to exploit a wide range of agricultural and semi-urban habitat has helped keep them common and widespread in their Midwestern range. Once the killdeer appear, there will be a wide host of other shorebirds returning. We will be enjoying greater and lesser yellowlegs, dowitchers, sandpipers, plovers, soon to name a few. Here's the first welcoming call of the killdeer. Red-winged blackbird males have returned seeking to tack down territories for their mates in the coming weeks. These birds are common during summer, but very, very few over winter in Iowa. As harbingers of spring, their calls powerfully proclaim that spring is arriving.
Red-winged blackbirds are common in swamps and marshes, but can be viewed in open pastures and agricultural waterways. Each pair raises two or three broods a season, building a new nest for each clutch. A pleasurable spring drive through our country roads with the windows down will solicit many territorial calls from the red-winged blackbirds. A third summer resident are early pioneers of turkey vultures. Turkey vultures are nature's janitorial service that primarily eat upon dead animals. They require unfrozen carcasses for nourishment. Consequently, they do not overwinter in Iowa. They are magnificent large dark birds and are sometimes confused with immature bald eagles. Turkey vultures' wing plane is dihedral or in the form of a V, which causes a tippy flight of wavering back and forth. In contrast, the wing profile of an eagle is planar and very flat. I once laid on my back and watched a turkey vulture soaring over southern Iowa that did not flap its wings for 22 minutes before it soared out of sight. I remember the day because there was a jet flying overhead, and I wondered if it contained the body of Dwight Eisenhower, who had recently passed away. I did not associate the turkey vulture with his death like in the movies. There will be a few turkey vulture individuals the next few days, then large flocks of 30 to 40 birds will be seen congregating at specific sites before dispersing across the landscape. One of these congregating sites is at Ledges State Park. Turkey vultures will be at our roadsides cleaning up roadkill animals the next few weeks. They will secure a nest site later in the spring in hollow logs or abandoned buildings. Their young of the year from last year will have a dark head, which will gradually become red as they mature into being adults. And that's our Focus on Phenology for today. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org. And if you're just joining us, this is KHOI, the Heart of Iowa, and we are functioning as a COVID-19 response local talk today on Tuesday. And with us through the technology of Zoom is Ann Kinsel and now Susan Guiasta and John Dunn with the Ames City Employment. We'll hear how they are dealing with this recent pandemic.
Good morning, John and Susan. Susan, first, can you tell us what your position is with the City of Ames and what you're doing as part of the COVID-19 response?
Good morning, Ann. Hi, I'm the Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames, and it's good to be on the air with you all. I have a monthly show at that I come to KHOI and talk about happenings at the city. But I was really happy to get the invitation to come more frequently because we think it's so important that residents know what the city is doing to respond to this pandemic crisis. John Dunn is one of the resources that I thought would be good to have on today's show, and I'll let John introduce himself.
Morning, Ann.
John.
My name's John Dunn. I'm the Director of Water and Pollution Control for the City of Ames. And so my department has got the treatment at both ends of the municipal water cycle. So we've got the drinking water treatment plant as well as the city's water pollution control facility.
So you control the basically the whole water system in Ames.
Pretty much anything that's above ground, we're responsible for. The city's public works department handles all of the buried piping in between the two facilities.
I see. Okay, so I could say you're responsible for what we take in and what we put out. Is that it?
That's it.
That's it. Okay. So tell us a little bit about your department. In the what we call now the normal times, how many employees do you have, and what is their, what are their typical duties?
Well, we've got, I think we're right now at 40 full-time employees, and then given, depending on the time of the year, there could be anywhere from 3 to 7 Iowa State interns working with us as well. But we're doing, the operation and maintenance of the drinking water treatment plant and the wastewater plant. We also have a water meter division, and those folks serve as our cash registers for both water and sewer. We've got a state-certified environmental compliance lab. You know, the operators in both treatment plants do their own process control monitoring, but the lab services division does all of the work that's required to be certified and submitted to the state. And then we have an administrative division, which is my home, so we're in charge of the overall administration of the division, budgeting, rate setting. This is also where our environmental engineers and environmental specialists are at. So they're managing all of the capital projects for the utility.
Okay. So when I practiced healthcare law, one of the things I learned in my public health role was that one of the great triumphs of public health was the provision of clean water. And that's basically what your department is responsible for in many ways, right?
Right. And when you think about this pandemic crisis that we're facing right now, we literally are sitting on the front line of stopping the spread of this virus. I mean, if you think what the guidance from the Department of Public Health and the CDC, the number one thing they're telling you, wash your hands for 20 to 30 seconds with tap water. And that couldn't happen without the services that our utility provides.
Yes, and it wouldn't do much good to wash your hands with dirty water, would it?
No. And you know, when I've seen people in the grocery stores trying to stock up on bottled water, I want our customers to know that tap water is absolutely safe to drink. This coronavirus that we're dealing with right now is part of a family of viruses that's pretty well known to be highly susceptible to chlorine disinfection. And so there's absolutely no reason to be concerned about the safety of the tap water.
Well, that's certainly good to know, John. One of the things that I'm interested in is, as we know, this virus transmits from human to human, and you have a staff that is dedicated to keeping us safe with our water supply and our sanitary sewer systems. So how are you helping manage the well-being of your staff so that they will be there to be able to do their work to help protect us?
Well, on the physical protection side, we're probably doing the same things that just about every other business is doing. We're doing multi times a day sanitation, you know, wiping down doorknobs and all surfaces that multiple folks are touching. But we're going even farther than that. We are starting to sequester the operation staffs at the two facilities. So we're keeping the rest of the staff out of the break rooms that those folks are using. And, you know, you may have heard about Des Moines Water Works actually sequestering employees on site and not letting them leave for a period of time. We haven't gone that far yet, but we do have a plan in place, and we've got the ability to do that on a moment's notice if we need to.
So how would that work?
And I'll just add that what we're doing at the water plant and water pollution control plant is mirroring what we do throughout the city facilities. So we are limiting public access, closing buildings, hand sanitizer all over, encouraging washing of hands, and being really cognizant. If employees feel that they're not feeling well, they go home. We don't keep sick people at work. We're limiting our exposure, and we are, as concerned as we are about the public health and safety of residents, we're equally concerned about our own employees. So we're taking precautions across the entire organization.
That's good to hear, Susan. I think it reassures all of us. John, how would that work if you had to sequester your employees? Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about that? I'm real curious.
Well, essentially what we would do at each of the two treatment facilities, we would have two teams. And one team would operate from, say, 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening. And then they they'd take 12 hours off, and the next team would take over for 12 hours. And we'd isolate them in the facility. Nobody else would be allowed in. Nobody would be allowed out. You know, we'd have food laid in for them. You know, we'd have beds set aside in offices that aren't being used. And essentially, they would just live here 24/7 for 2 weeks. And then if needed.
2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, 2 weeks at a time. And we've got a second group ready to go once that first 14 days is over, if we need to go for another 2 weeks. And we could just keep that cycle going indefinitely. But the whole focus is to try to keep those operators, isolated and keep them safe, because that's really the most critical thing we can do to protect the community, is keep the water and wastewater facilities operational.
That's really interesting. So, these folks have families and children and things. So are there any issues of childcare that arise in that?
Well, there would be. We're working, maybe Susan could talk more about this, but we're trying to.
Yeah, I can jump in on that.
Yeah.
We actually have identified critical need staff in our organization. That would be public health and safety employees, and that would include our water plants. We have started on Monday a small child watch program at the City of Ames, where we have a small group of employee children where we're watching them using some of our parks and recreation staff that have been screened. So we're aware of some of the challenges that would come with some of these shifts, how they would affect our employees' personal lives, and how we can ensure that we continue to provide residents with the critical services that they need.
That's really good to hear, because we don't get a lot of this kind of detail in the newspaper or on the internet or on television. So it's really comforting to hear the kind of things that the city is doing right here in our community. So thank you.
Yeah, as you know, it changes every day, and we need to kind of stay ahead. It's difficult to project what we might need tomorrow, but we all spend time, we gather regularly. We are meeting with not just our own organization, but with other community organizations to identify what those future needs might be. So, I want to assure residents that, we're trying to map out a future that's a little uncertain, but we are truly doing the best we can with the best and brightest employees. And I hope that the citizens of Ames feel confident that their local government is working for them.
And I think that, you know, Susan, you raise a good point. It's not just the citizens of Ames, but we have vital functions here in Ames that serve Story County. For example, Mary Greeley Medical Center, the McFarland Clinic, and so on. So we provide support for regionally in a way for all kinds of people. Excuse me. John, I want to get into a little delicate subject here. It's a little early in the morning, but these are the new normals, so I'm going to jump right in. I've been seeing some nasty pictures on the internet and some comments about what people are doing with supposedly disposable wipes and the sewer system. Can you give our listeners some advice on what they should be disposing and how?
Well, probably the most important thing that a consumer can do to help the wastewater utility right now is to be very conscious of what you're putting down the drain, and in particular, what you're flushing. And the advice is to only flush the three P's, and that's poo, pee, and paper. Nothing else should be going down the toilet. You know, there's a lot of wipes that are marketed as being flushable, and with the run on toilet paper, those have gained a lot of popularity in the last couple of weeks. But those are not something that breaks down in water. We've got a display here that we set up back in the middle of January, where we put a wipe in that was being marketed as being flushable. And it's been sitting in a jar for over 2 months, and it still has not broken down. And what happens is those things will collect either on the impellers and a pump in the system, or maybe if there's a sewer that's got a tree root that's protruding through it, you know, one wipe will get wrapped around it, and then another one, and pretty soon you've got a giant ball of those, and they end up plugging the sewer. And it either results in untreated wastewater coming out at a manhole, or unfortunately, the more common thing that happens is it ends up in somebody's basement, either a home or in a business. And so to protect the public health, we ask folks to please not flush those. Just drop them in a waste can for us.
Okay, well, that's good advice, folks. Remember your three P's, all right? Is there, as we continue, John, is there any other advice that you would like to give people in Ames about how they can best help protect our water and wastewater system as we continue through this new normal, this time of uncertainty?
Yeah, we always encourage conservation, and I'd like folks to know that there's still a role for that in this environment. You know, this is exactly the type of situation that we're trying to conserve water for. So I don't want anybody to feel guilty if they're running the faucet, you know, for 30 seconds to wash their hands multiple times a day. That's what it's here for. Watering lawns is more of a, you know, a nice perk that you get by having water brought to your home for you, but it's really there for the sanitation purposes. But if people could conserve on the non-essential needs, what that does for us right now is it allows us to stretch the supplies of the chemicals that we have on hand. Now, we're not experiencing any disruptions in our supply chain right now. We've been talking with all of our vendors about that, and we're also kind of bulking up a little bit on the inventory that we carry on hand. But if we ever did run into a supply chain disruption, conservation would be a really key thing to help us stretch the supply of those chemicals.
So tell me what you would consider, John, to be a non-essential water use as we move through the COVID-19 situation.
Well, the average day demand for water in Ames runs right around 6 million gallons a day. But that goes from a low over the Christmas time period of about 3.5 to, in the summer, it goes up to 9.5 or so. And it's not because we've got a big influx of people in the summer in Ames. If anything, it's the opposite. That big spike in the demand comes from outdoor water use. And that's really probably the big voluntary use of water that we see in the community. And we don't tell people don't water your lawns. Our conservation message is about smart water, and it's about being smart with the way you use it and recognizing that if you've got water running down a driveway or running down the curb, you know, it doesn't matter how much you water it. You're not going to grow more concrete. And so keeping that water where you need it, putting it on at the right times of the day, not putting on more than your lawn needs, that's probably the single most important conservation message I could give.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I hadn't thought at all about the issue of the chemicals that you need to keep the water system safe, but that's a really good point. So we're going to have to wrap up here, John, and I'm going to turn us over to my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. I want to thank you for your participation this morning, both you and Susan.
Oh, John, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for your service, John. And thank you for all that you're doing for the City of Ames, Susan Guiasta, the Public Relations Director. And we hope to have you on again.
We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. And in the studio, thank you, Ann. And in the studio, we've been joined by Anna Magnuson. And I guess we're starting up a new program of heart-to-heart messages. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. So I want to thank both you and Mike for helping me out today. And yes, today we are trying out a new segment that we are calling KHOI's Heart-to-Heart Messages. During this unprecedented time in our history, dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, the leadership team here invited their internal stakeholders to brainstorm ideas of how KHOI could help our community stay connected when we have been asked to keep our distance from each other. So when I was younger, my guilty pleasure was listening to Delilah on the radio. You might recognize her theme song, Delilah. Okay, maybe not, but definitely probably shouldn't sing on the radio, huh? But back to why I wanted to tune in. And if you're unfamiliar with Delilah's show format, the caller would share their story, and then Delilah would find the song that perfectly matched the situation. And I really loved and admire how she connected that individual story to a community of listeners. So I thought, why not channel my inner Delilah and become your local radio host, Anna Banana?
Good idea.
Thank you.
Good idea.
So Delilah, oh, stop it, Anna. All right. So yes, heart-to-heart messages with Anna Banana was the idea I presented, which was to invite listeners to send KHOI messages of love, hope, support, care, and concern that we read on air and encourage others to respond to these heart-to-heart messages. So let's give it a go, shall we?
Uh-huh.
So if you'll so kindly indulge me, my first heart-to-heart message is one that my mom sent to our family last week. This year, my mom has been through a rough time in 2020. After a prolonged illness, her husband and my stepdad passed away this February. They had been married for over 30 years, and my mom had cared for him during the last 12 years, including being responsible for taking on nursing duties that helped preserve his quality of life and also led to saving his foot from being amputated. They made all of their decisions together, and she carried out his wishes until the very end. She was there by his side when he took his last breath only a month ago. And there have been these moments of grief for my mom that have caught her completely off guard, in those little unexpected moments like finding his wallet, or in those profound moments of sadness having to write his obituary. Getting her through the sorrow was anticipation of her granddaughter, my niece, visiting from out of state to spend spring break with our family in Iowa. So she set aside her own pain to plan the perfect St. Patrick's Day dinner party. Now, my mom, if you know her, she goes to the grocery store and buys for an army. So we had probably 14,000 pounds of nuts, chicken wings and all sorts of things, but she also planned the dinner party to be complete with our grandmother's Irish soda bread and corned beef and cabbage, and she was really excited about this gathering. But then the impact of COVID-19 hit our family as we were forced to make the difficult decision to stay home, to stay apart. We were disappointed, and I would say devastated, that we had to cancel this joyful celebration of being together. And since March 17th, our family has kept our distance. Now, my mom, who is in the thrust of grieving, is now even more alone with our self-imposed isolation. She loves being part of and out and about in the community. So both of my parents taught my siblings and me the importance of giving back, and this probably explains why their children have gone on to serve as a teacher or work and volunteer for nonprofit organizations. And I know it's one of the reasons why I love the mission and spirit of KHOI. So when my sister, brother, and I would act up or spoiled, my mom's way of correcting our selfish ways would to take us to the Catholic Social Worker House in Des Moines, and we would have to bring donations of food and clothing. So after returning to Iowa after living away for the last 20 years, I set up an appointment with Father Frank Cordero, who works at the Catholic Social Worker House. And I'd relayed the story about how my mom would correct our behavior by having us donate our time and our food and clothing donations to the Catholic Social Worker House. And he said I had a great mom, and indeed I do. So now my mom, who is named for St. Teresa of Avila. Now, who is this woman? Teresa of Avila was a Spanish nun who belonged to an order devoted to quiet prayer, poverty, and austerity. So this is who my mom was named after. And she included this message from St. Teresa that she has hung on her bedroom wall that her mother had cross-stitched when she knew that she was going to be born. And she put this message in the message to us to provide comfort and peace to our family, struggling to stay apart and yet stay together. So before we went to bed and texting in a goodnight message to our group message, it read as follows. Let's not forget to lift up each other and our family to the Creator God, and remember that the world changes, but God does not. I live by the saying by St. Teresa, let nothing disturb you, nothing affright you. All things are passing, but God never changes. Bless your night, bless our families, have grateful hearts for our many blessings. Love, Momsy. So I'm 47, I still call my mom Momsy. So that was a nice little send-off. And so for those moms out there who are providing comfort, care, and love, thank you. And for those of you who have recently experienced a loss, and I know there are many out there because I've received your emails and messages from those that are part of my groups that I've received in the past couple of days and weeks, we hold you with care, concern, and love. Now, the other heart-to-heart message for today is for our dear Ursula Rudenberg, who is a station manager at KHOI. And anyone who's here and sits in this room, we know at the heart of KHOI is our dear Ursula. I met Ursula last autumn, and I was just so immediately impressed with her dedication and passion to the very idea of community radio, and specifically the station. So Ursula, if you don't know her, grew up in Ames, Iowa, and has been living and had lived in, for the past 30 years in New York City. So she, like me, came back home to help take care of her father. Ursula began painting sets for her mother, and if you know, her mother actually founded the Octagon here in Ames. She has an impressive set of parents, and as she is impressive as well. And she spent much of her life as a professional mural painter. So if you see the postcards for KHOI, that mural she helped create, which I just love, and I keep telling her, I'm nagging her, please turn those into a T-shirt. I'll wear it. Or a coffee mug. That's a great way to fundraise. So I'm doing my little pitch there. But she's an incredibly talented woman. She returned to Ames in order to help get KHOI on the air and spent most of her time helping her dad. Ursula has been a community radio listener since she discovered Pacifica while living in Los Angeles in the 1970s. She is currently employed by Pacifica Radio and managing their affiliate network of around 200 stations, so she has an impressive resume. She feels that community radio is the best thing, and it is her pleasure to help bring this type of media to Central Iowa. And she really helped mobilize all of the internal stakeholders, as I said in the beginning of this segment, to think about how can KHOI make a difference during this time of separation. She wanted to make sure that we use the KHOI as a platform to connect us, to help us know what's going on, like the three Ps, which I kind of knew, but now I definitely will remember. Don't put anything down the toilet. That's not going to disintegrate. But all those things, all those interviews, all of our radio hosts, all the people who travel across the state to come to be with us know the importance of community radio. And that's what Ursula is about. It's about community and about from the heart. She gives of her time and her talent and her treasure. In her free time, Ursula is hard at play building a straw bale lasagna garden in her father's backyard under the watchful eyes of the deer. A little fun fact about Ursula. So right now, so I understand, Pat and Mike, that Ursula's father had surgery this morning at 7, scheduled for surgery.
Yeah, and Klaus is 99.
He's 99 and still working.
Yeah, every day. Yes.
Yeah, he's incredible. In fact, I invited Ursula and her dad because I wanted to meet Klaus at the Kiwanis pancake dinner. And she said, I can't find my dad. He's at the lab or busy or doing something. So he missed the pancake dinner. He's so busy. So Ursula, we want you to know that we're holding your father and you in our hearts. And your KHOI heart-to-heart message is one of support, care, and best wishes for your father as he undergoes and recovers from surgery today. And thank you for all that you do for KHOI, Ursula. Our community is better for having you in it. And for all those community leaders out there making a difference, thank you. And those of you caring for the sick and vulnerable, we thank you as well. So today's heart-to-heart messages are provided and inspired by a mother and a community leader. So if you would like to respond to any of these messages, I invite you to text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077 or email me at khoradio@gmail.com.
Oh, thank you so much, Anna Magnuson, with your heart-to-heart messages. I'm sure this is really going to grow. And thank you so much. This is a special local talk on the COVID-19 response. And for just a moment, realize that we've all heard about the social distancing due to the COVID-19 virus. Yet here at KHOI, we're hoping we might generate a heart-to-heart distancing that brings us ever closer together during these troubled times. Let's look out for each other and take care of each other so the virus doesn't beat us into someone we don't want to be. And remember that you can also hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy from Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Ross Wilburn, state legislator for House District 46, Susan Guiasta, the public relations officer for the City of Ames, and John Dunn, and Anna Magnuson. And I've been your host, Pat Schlarbaum with co-host Ann Kinzel with the Ames Progressive Alliance. Any last words, Ann? I don't know if she's still with us.
She's not.
So stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. And later today, the Lana and Donna Kitchen Show at noon and a special Pantorium session in Studio A with Nick Mulbauer this evening at 7 p.m. You won't want to miss this talented Ames performer, yet due to the coronavirus, we will not be able to include the public. So please join in by listening to this live performance at khoifm.org. And tomorrow evening, we feature Miss Christine and her album Conversion for a special Pantorium session. But once again, the public will not be able to attend that live performance. It is so great these performers can provide their music as a break in the tedium of the coronavirus pandemic. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.